Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
In your company, a challenge? Are you battling turnover and struggling to draw key talent? Is your team not performing at the level you want? Problems present themselves through conflict, miscommunication, creative differences, unclear expectations, and motivational issues. ARC Integrated is here to address these challenges through executive coaching and customized interactive trainings. Create lasting positive change that will improve your bottom line and create a culture that attracts talent and reduces turnover by going to arcintegrated.com. That's arcintegrated.com.
How does an economy that is more mindful and less mindless become a reality? Welcome to the Mindful Marketplace. I'm your host, Joel Skeen, and I'm happy to welcome you to the show where we ask experts, entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders for their perspectives on how all of us can, on every level, do our part to help create a more mindful marketplace. Welcome, welcome back to the Mindful Marketplace. My name is Joel Skeen. I'm your host, and I am very excited about today's guest. We're continuing in our series of investment professionals. You know, when I started this show back in May of last year, or this year, I'm losing track. We're almost getting to the end of the year here. Actually, by the time this airs, it may already be 2023. So happy new year to you, if it is that. When I started this show, you know, we really defined the topic of what we were going to be talking about here as looking at businesses that are practicing things in a mindful way rather than in a mindless way. But as we've been going along here, I've really been excited about the direction of the guests that we've been having on. You know, a few weeks back, I would encourage you to go back and listen. I did an episode on the 10 strategies for local investing. You know, a lot of people don't realize that they can actually invest their money locally, not just in Wall Street. And we continue that discussion about impact investing, values-based investing, and local investing with Angela Barbash a few weeks ago, one of the only maybe a couple dozen advisors in the entire country who helps her clients invest their money, not just on Wall Street, but locally. And today we have on Peter Kroll, the CEO of Earth Equity, someone who has been helping people invest with their values for quite a long time. And I think that where I want to start this discussion today is really by talking about what is an investment. You know, we think a lot about investment as getting an ROI on our money. But as Michael Schumann, the author of Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, points out, we should also be looking at investing as getting an ROI, not just financially, but also socially, also for creating the kind of future that we want to have. We often say that your dollar is your vote. That's not just for investors. That's for consumers. When you spend your money, you're casting a vote for the kind of companies you'd like to see succeed and the kind of future you'd like to see. If you are a manager or you're a business owner, the kind of investments that you make into your people, into your staff, into your employees, and into the relationships that you have with other business owners creates the kind of future that you either want to see or that you don't want to see. We have this idea in our culture and in our minds that it's good to try to make a better future for our children than the one that we got to experience. But I would want to remind us of, it's actually an indigenous wisdom that I learned about not too long ago recently, where we're looking forward not into just into the future of our next generation, but when we make decisions about how we should conduct ourselves, we should actually be thinking about 7 generations into the future. How will the way that we operate and the way that we do business today affect 7 generations down the road? And so, you know, the question I really want to start asking on this show with, and, you know, that I want to involve our guests on and involve you, the listener, in on is, what if investing in each other was really the way to change the world? What if investing in ourselves by getting ourselves out of debt, by investing in our family's future, and also by investing in our local communities and investing in the kind of businesses that we want to see thrive in the world? What if moving our investments away from simply looking at a return on our investment financially, but also a return on our investment socially can do in our world? We have to take care of our own house, and we always want to relieve the suffering that is caused by things like oppression. But I think what I'm talking about here is also relieving the kind of suffering that actually causes the oppression. And one
one guy that I've been really excited to have on the show for a long time, I'm glad we were able to finally work it out, is Peter Kroll. He has been helping people, families, individuals, and businesses help invest their money with their values for quite some time. He has been a featured, he's an author, a regular contributor to Forbes magazine. He is kind of blowing up all over the place right now, and there's a lot for us to talk about. So I will not delay any further. Peter, thank you for being on the show.
Well, it is a pleasure to be on, and I really enjoyed the intro there, talking about, you know, everything from local investing to, you know, aligning your investments with your values, which is what we do. And in fact, I've actually met Michael Schumann before as well.
Yeah, I love his books. I love his, what does he call his journal, the Main Street Journal instead of the Wall Street Journal? Love that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful to get him on there at some point as well. But first, I want to talk with you a little bit about your background and how did you even get connected with and get excited by and decide that you wanted to commit your career to helping people invest with their values?
Well, it started when I actually decided to help people invest, period. I had, you know, my background is actually in communication. My degree is in communication. And for a while, I worked in the retail electronics business, which is, you know, not really anywhere near investing. But what was great about it is that I really learned how to work with people. You know, being a salesperson and a manager and a training coordinator and a whole bunch of interesting things. And so, when I started off in the investment business in 1998 with Merrill Lynch. I think I came fairly well prepared. I just needed to learn what the investment side of the business was, which I really enjoyed. So I worked at Merrill for about 5 years, give or take. And about that time, I was dating the woman who's now my wife. She is Dr. Melissa Booth. She's a PhD in microbiology and molecular genetics. So I definitely married up. There's no doubt about that. Anyway, we were having, you know, really in-depth conversations about the environment, about climate change, about sustainability. And so that piqued my interest. And about that same time, I also had a chance to spend an afternoon with a gentleman named Bill McDonough. And Bill was, and probably still is, considered one of the preeminent green architects in the world. And he also was the author of a book called Cradle to Cradle. And Cradle to Cradle is really sort of a tome on circular economy and how do we eliminate the concept of waste from our businesses, from our systems, from our processes. And so I took those two influences and said, you know, I think that we can really do something with this. We can you know, we can start a business that is focused on investing, which is what I really enjoy doing, but also making it beyond just the bottom line numbers to see if there's an ROI, as you said earlier, that is just not investment, but also is on, you know, the planet and on society.
Yeah, absolutely. What was going on in the industry that really kind of gave you those light bulb moments and made you think there may be a different way to do that?
I'm not sure if there was anything necessarily in the industry that was going on. It just, I'll take you back to a story here. So when I was at Merrill, there was one of the other financial advisors in the office. This was in Roanoke, Virginia at the time. Every time the Calvert Investments rep came in to talk to people, and Calvert is one of the old school social responsible investing firms. They've been around for a long time. But every time one of their reps came in, you know, he would talk to us trainees at the time and said, you know, I really want to do this social responsible thing. I think that it's something that, you know, is going to flourish. And of course, he never followed up on that because it wasn't something that was part of his ethic. It was actually, it was more just a marketing opportunity for him. Hmm. And I think for me, again, having a relationship with Melissa, having spent that time with Bill, it really resonated with me. You know, I grew up spending a lot of time outdoors up in Western New York, right between Buffalo and Niagara Falls is where I grew up. But we had a cabin south of the city in the hills near a lake. And so I spent a lot of time outdoors, and it just really felt natural to move in this direction. And, you know, understanding what I could understand from what Melissa was, you know, teaching me about climate change and sustainability, it just made sense. It just clicked.
I didn't realize you were from Western New York up there. I actually grew up in a tiny little town way out in the middle of nowhere, right next to Letchworth State Park. I don't know if you happen to know where that is.
I've been to Letchworth many times. Our cabin was in Rushford, if you know where that is.
Oh, yeah. No, I went to Letchworth Central School. My town had about 600 people in it. And my dad was actually a church camp director out there, which is why we were out there in cow country.
We used to go bowling at Letchworth Pines. They also had volleyball net there.
No way. That's crazy. Well, we could, I'm sure we could, we could catch up on a lot of that. Go Bills this year, I guess.
Yeah, go Bills. I'm a big Sabres fan too. So.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I grew up in the height of the, I think I was five in 1990. So I was just getting into school when the Bills were very good, but losing every Super Bowl every year.
Yeah.
So,
that's bad time. We don't talk about those years.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think that there's something to that, though. There is something about being connected with nature, and there's something with kind of realizing just how special that resource that we have is. I recognize it here in Western North Carolina.
Yeah.
And just wanting to protect that. I guess the next kind of section I wanted to really, you know, dive in with you here is about what actually is sustainable mm-hmm. investing. I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of people out here who like that idea. They think that's a good sounding thing, but have no idea what, kind of where to start with that. There's also a lot of stuff in the news about kind of, you know, ESG, you know, people maybe have heard that, that acronym, but not really know much about it. I guess for you, where does values-based investing sort of start and, you know, how, you know, kind of help bring a little clarity to that for the listener.
Yeah, because there's a lot of clarity that is missing out there in this. I'll just generically call it responsible investing right now, because there's so much misinformation. There's so much what we'll call greenwashing out mm-hmm. there that it's really hard for somebody who's a layperson to find out or to figure out, you know, what's right for me, what is the best, what is sustainable investing, what's ESG, what are all these acronyms that I'm hearing. So I'll start from talking a little bit about what ESG is. So ESG is just an acronym for environmental, social, and governance. And what that means is it's looking at companies through the lens of an environmental lens, a social lens, and a governance lens. And so how can we quantify these aspects of a company? So on the environmental side, you might quantify what their carbon emissions are, you know, scope 1, 2, and, you know, if you can get the data, scope 3 emissions, and how is that a liability for the company? You might also look at what their products and services are. Now, that might be less quantifiable, but for us, that is really important because we believe it's important to understand and invest in companies that are being positive. I'll talk more about that in a minute. On the S side, the social side, how does is a company a good member of the community? How are they contributing to the community? And you can quantify that by looking at what their what their contributions are monetarily to the community. How are they involved? How many person hours are they volunteering? Things like that. And on the governance side, the G side, it's looking at how is the company performing from a regulatory perspective. But it also is things like how many women are on their board of directors, or how diverse is their board of directors, not just gender wise, but also racially and ethnically. And also, how diverse is your upper level management? All of these things are quantifiable. Those are something that we can put into a spreadsheet where we can really gauge companies relative to each other and on an absolute basis. So that's what ESG is. The danger with ESG, and this is probably the biggest greenwashing thing that we see, is that you get these big companies, and BlackRock is the one I usually like to pick on, because they'll just take an arbitrary index, be it the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 or some arbitrary index, and they will simply layer over top of it this ESG data. And at the end of the day, what you end up getting is a portfolio that's a little bit better because you may have reduced your allocation to Exxon, or you may have upped a little bit of your allocation in solar or clean energy or something like that. But at the end of the day, what you end up getting is a less bad portfolio. And if you're okay with having something less bad, that's fine. But you know, we believe that it's more important to have something that's sustainable. So this would be the contrast between ESG investing and sustainable investing, where sustainable investing is more focused on the positive. What are the opportunities that we have to invest in companies that are going to make a difference, that are solutions providers, that are actually bringing us opportunities for both to negate some of the carbon emissions and things that are, you know, causing some of our problems here, or also make us more resilient at the same time. So the best way I typically characterize this is a portfolio that reduces its exposure to ExxonMobil is less bad. One that reduces it entirely is better, but one that replaces it with, say, First Solar or a positive solution is actually sustainable.
Hmm. You mentioned there being, you know, a market demand from that mentor that you were working with, you know, and how he was looking at sustainable investing, not so much coming from an ethical perspective, but just the fact that there's a demand for this. Yeah. Do you see that demand growing?
The demand has most certainly been growing. We actually, our trade group is called US SIF, the Forum for Sustainable Investing. They put out a report every 2 years. And unfortunately, we're not taping in time for the new one to come out, but it will come out very shortly here, and we'll be able to see what the growth has been over the last 2 years. But you know, it's been consistently the fastest growing segment of the investment industry in general, and you know, we've been a part of that, and that's actually really, really exciting.
Yeah, I find that really exciting. And obviously, you know, one thing that I also see happening, just as, you know, as I'm paying attention to this stuff as best I can, is that it seems like there's actually a fair amount of pushback. There seems to be a fair amount of people who, you know, you talk about doing things just a little less bad, and it seems like there's a lot of people who are like, no, we got to keep it bad.
Exactly.
What do you attribute that to? Where do you think that comes from?
Oh, that's purely partisan. There's really no other way to say that. That's a partisan issue, and it's an artificial issue. It is something that is basically created to divide. And so, you know, the former vice president wrote a op-ed, or somebody wrote it for him, I'm sure, in the journal, basically calling this woke investing, and that it's activist capitalism or something like that. And the reality is that sustainable investing is just simply enhanced due diligence investing. If I gave you the opportunity to invest in a company knowing as much of the background on it and as much of both the opportunities and the risks on it, you're probably going to have a better investment than if you just you know, put the blinders on and don't look at what climate risk might be, and don't look at what you know, social or other governance risks might be. There's Utah, which is in a drought state right now, and mm-hmm. has been for a while. The Great Salt Lake is continuing to dry up. Got really upset that S&P gave them a slightly negative environmental rating, and they gave them a negative environmental rating because of the material risk of drought on their municipal bonds. And they got all up in arms about that we, you know, you shouldn't be judging us based on these environmental factors. And at the end of the day, it's a material risk to have a drought. It could negatively impact that municipality or those individual small municipalities. And so we would much rather see the data as opposed to sticking our head in the sand, which is what they're proposing that we do.
Yeah, it does. And if there's a demand for it, you know, it doesn't seem like that. That seems like you could call it woke capitalism, but it seems like if there's a market for something, you know, why would filling that market be a problem unless, you know, there's some other, you know, incentive that's behind that, that's kind of being hidden, you know?
You mean like campaign donations and things like that?
No, of course not. Of course not. No.
You know, there's a ton of hypocrisy when it comes to this kind of stuff, because there's a lot of folks who call for free markets and, you know, free capitalism. But when the free markets actually come up with a solution like this, then they want to regulate it. So you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. How is it that your firm actually helps their clients? Is it, are you just kind of doing traditional investing, but focusing most of the investments in a socially responsible way? What does that look like when someone works with Earth Equity? Yep.
Yeah, so we invest, I mean, not a whole lot different than the, you know, traditional Wall Street firms do. But when we actually pick our investments, we're a lot more intentional about what the holdings are. So, for example, there's so much of a push towards like indexing and just, you know, own the entire stock market. I think a friend of mine, Garvin J. Bush, who runs the Green Alpha Funds, basically calls indexing slow motion active management. Because, you know, things actually go in and out of indexes. It's usually just after they're long out of favor. Mm. And so, you know, we don't do the indexing model because it doesn't make sense. But we invest pretty much one of two ways with clients. We run four different diversified mutual fund portfolios. So we handpick each of the funds that are in there to make sure that they don't have fossil fuels in them, or that they're absolutely minimized. We make sure that each of those portfolios have very distinctly positive investments in them, especially in the area of clean energy, in the area of biotech, and things that are actually going to make a positive difference. So that's one way, is using our fund portfolios. Second is we have two individual stock portfolios that we run. One of them called the Green Sage Sustainability Portfolio, which we're actually about to, on December 21st, we'll have our 10-year anniversary on that, which is, I mean, we've been around for a long time. It's got a 10-year track record. And that's individual stocks really focused specifically on sustainability and all of the different aspects that are included there. And then we include things like, obviously, clean energy, batteries, which, you know, 10 years ago, we couldn't buy a battery stock. They just didn't exist yet. But it's also got water in there. It's got real estate, sustainable real estate, green building, again, biotech, stuff like that. So it's really focused on ways to make the world better. And then we also, it's got a sister portfolio called the Green Sage Decarb Portfolio, which is a little bit more in-depth on decarbonizing the economy.
That's impressive, and I'm excited to get to continue this conversation. I don't think I mentioned it at the beginning. This is going to be a two-part episode because we have so much to talk about with Peter here. So you can listen to this first half on bizradio.us. You can also go to mindfulmarketplaceshow.com. You can look up Mindful Marketplace Show on Instagram and LinkedIn as well. To listen to this episode, but please tune in next week where you will get to hear the conclusion and the second half of this really fascinating and really exciting conversation with Peter Corral, CEO of Earth Equity. So until next week, everyone, take care of yourselves and make sure to take care of someone else too. And Peter, thanks for being on here, and I'm looking forward to finishing up this conversation with you here.
Thank you, Joel. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.